in my 8 years at the association not to do that. So with that, I want to talk a little bit. I really appreciate the background and the backdrop that Erica gave us, because it does set up what I'm going to talk about, which is really in a much more day-to-day way, how do our policies, APHA's policies, transfer into advocacy, and what is it that APHA does, how we do it well, and where we actually have some challenges, both internal and external. And I will not give away all of our secrets, but I will try and give you an overview that is, in fact, relevant. Those of you who are in this room who are APHA members should know all of this, but I thought that it's just a good idea to remind us that we've been around for 140 years. This is our 140th meeting, that we have both sections for our members, and we have affiliates in every state. So we have a broad reach around the country, and we another thing to remind us of at October 30th, in advance of an activity happening next Tuesday, that we are, in fact, a nonpartisan organization. We try and work with whoever it is within government at the federal level, as well as at the state and local level, who is interested in these issues, and find champions wherever we can find them. APHA, as all organizations are, is a complex organization, and if this just tries to lay out, in some sense, how the policy policy works, how the information flows from one part to the next. And our members really are our base. We have about 25,000 members around the country, and it is how APHA should and does operate, and how we figure where the expertise lies and where the priorities come from. And so we move from our APHA members up to our governing council, which has a very important role to play in terms of policy, with the final fiduciary responsibility lying in our executive board. This is the strategic map under which we work, and this, again, really helps to lay out where APHA is and where we're going and what we think is important. And for those of you who have been around for a while and remember what previous strategic maps have looked like, they're much more complex than this. And we might have had the same number of boxes at the top, but a number of layers beneath. The goal, really, in the last several years has been to try and focus and organize in terms of the work that we're doing to be able to provide member services that are valuable and relevant at the same time that we are able to make an impact on the issues that we think are important. And I think that those things often go hand in hand. The idea that we can really focus on several things, both internally and externally, and then move those forward to then have more authority on the next issue is something that APHA is really focusing on. If you have looked at this, one of the most important activities that APHA does is looking at kind of the big picture related to public health. There are a number of organizations within the United States that look at pieces of this, but there's no other organization that has both the scope and reach that we do, as well as look at the big picture. So there are other organizations that have bigger budgets, they have more members or volunteers, but APHA is really the one organization that looks at the full scope of public health activities, both in terms of the advocacy work we do, but even more broadly, these overarching priorities, which were adjusted by the board just last Friday and will be confirmed in front of the governing council later this afternoon, are slightly different than the way that they've been addressed before, but the issues are basically the same. And you see that almost any public health issue that's important is affected and can be addressed by these umbrella policy and overarching priorities. So if you go to this website right now, it's not going to look like this. If you go to this website in a couple weeks when we get back, we've had a little bit of chance to sleep, these three priority policies they'll be addressed, they will be looked at in this way. So with that, thinking of these are our overarching policy priorities, we are really trying to focus on creating healthier communities. And one of the taglines that we've often used in the last several years is the idea of the healthiest nation, one generation. Sorry, it's just the way that we're trying to go. And so we're really trying to focus on these ideas of how we can, what interlocking policies we have that can really impact the public's health. And the idea that some of the traditional roads under which we have traveled are not necessarily the best roads to impact policy and to impact the communities. And so if you look at this list of advocacy activities that we've been focusing on for the last couple of years, you'll see some things that are expected: appropriations and funding for the Public Health Service, protecting the Affordable Care Act and the Prevention and Public Health Fund, but some things that are less expected. The Clean Air Act is an issue that we've been working on very, very with a lot of focus in the last couple of years. And federal transportation and farm bill are two other pieces of legislation that have been moving forward that we've been working on, really trying to address these ideas with these issues, with the idea that health and all policies is the only way that we're only going to be able to make a change. Everybody talks about that medical care and treatment equal a part of trying to create healthy communities, but you need to move upstream when you're talking about truly creating long-term healthy places for people to eat, live, work, and play. And the same is true, then, if you're talking about trying to create those communities. You can't just focus on the public health or health sector. You need to move far beyond that, which is why we've been actively involved in some of these other initiatives. But there are challenges, both for the traditional work that we're doing and for the less traditional work that we're doing. And part of it is internal, and part of it is external. And the hostile environment is external. Clearly, when you talk to public health, we all agree that the goal is to create healthier communities and do it by not just medicalizing the system, but actually creating people who don't get sick in the first place. And so to do that, we do need to find new partners and new champions. We are really, really, really good at talking to ourselves as a community. We're getting better at talking to like-minded people in the environmental community or in disease-specific community, but we need to talk to other people as well. And having worked on the transportation initiative a lot in the last several years, I will tell you that I came to that table speaking a completely different language. I would talk about health and public health. They would hear safety. They understood that. They didn't go much beyond that. I would talk about creating walkable, livable streets so that people can access jobs, they can access services, they can access fresh fruits and vegetables. They would hear safety. So there are lots of different ways that we really need to focus on the issue of finding new partners and having them educate us and helping to educate them as well. Two other real challenges, and this will show up in a variety of different ways, are the budget realities that we're facing in the United States and the political stalemate that we are also facing in the United States. So this is just an illustration of that, and we were just talking about earthquakes, so it's particularly relevant. The issue that I talked about when you looked at our overarching policy priorities is how broad the public health sector is and the number of different issues that we do and can focus on. And it then makes it a challenge to make public health a priority. We can walk into a room and we could talk about food safety or child nutrition, or walk into a room and talk about climate change or reducing cancer. And we know that we're talking about public health, but not everybody that we talk to knows that that is, in fact, a public health message. So that has been a constant challenge, is when we're talking about policy, when we're talking to people who don't necessarily understand the world from the same way, to let them know that we're talking about a public health approach and an upstream approach. One of the things that's frustrating for me from where I sit within APHA is to hear from our members, from our partners, from policymakers, that they don't hear from public health. They don't hear the public health message. They don't hear the public health community coming to them and giving them a rationale for why these are and are priorities and should be priorities, when in fact they're hearing it all the time, but it's not using this language of public health, so they don't necessarily recognize it. So it's our challenge to use language that people understand and to move a message forward. At the same time, it is to help people understand that it's not different pieces of a puzzle. It's the entire puzzle that's important. And you can't focus on just one side without impacting or positively or negatively the other side. And that's a challenge that we have often internally to the public health community, where we have a limited pool of money, we have a limited pool of resources. We might have 150 years in life or 25 hours in a day, but it's still, you can only do so much with different times. So it is really trying to have a common message. At the same time, we're moving forward in language that people can understand. I just wanted to throw in a little bit of really practical information. We, for those of you who are APHA members, you might not know this, but we know what you do, or we try and know what you do, because that's one of the metrics that we use to figure out if we're effective. If we're effective in getting messages out to you so that you will, in fact, find it important enough to take action on these things, and then to figure out, in fact, what information is going out to the policymaker or to local media to understand better what they're hearing and what they're not and where we can fill in. And I look at this and I see lots of pretty colors, and I see some the prioritizing being good, because public health funding is really the core of what we can and should be focusing on. On the other hand, I look at this and I see that in 2011, APHA advocates sent 14,000 messages to Capitol Hill. There are 25,000 members. This assumes that each one of these messages probably went out to two senators and one member of Congress. So that means that a very small percentage of our members took action on on any of the advocacy alerts we sent out, because the opportunity to respond was much larger than that. If we could just get APHA members to respond to the advocacy alerts, to acknowledge, if you look at those advocacy alerts, and one will come up later, the first line, which you can't change, it says, as a public health advocate and a constituent, to whatever member of Congress you're sending it. So they know that whatever comes afterward is a public health message and that you're going to vote on this. We could be so powerful. So if we could get that message up, that 14,000 up to 140,000 or 240,000 or 500,000 messages going to Capitol Hill with a public health message, we could make much more of an impact than we're currently making. And so what I wanted to focus on is this is so far in 2012. And the positive thing is, if you look at this third bullet, we're doing better. So far in 2012, we've sent out 26,000 messages approximately. So we've not quite doubled it, but I suspect by the end of the year we will, because we will see Congress coming back after the election. But we still have a long way to go to increase that exponentially, so that Capitol Hill knows we're there. That Capitol Hill knows that come next election, if you are not focusing on these issues, that maybe people will not be back in 2014. Or maybe they will, because they were able to focus on something positive for public health. The other piece I wanted to acknowledge here, though, is that it's not just about advocacy. It's not just about sending alerts. It's also about using the agency system through the regulatory process and the legal system through legal briefs. So there are lots of different ways to impact policy. And even if you, as an APHA member, or even for us as APHA staff, if we are not able to focus or get a lot of information out about or even impact the process at the congressional level, there are other opportunities to help make change for public health. So I want to talk about a couple of different initiatives that we have focused on to give you a little bit of idea of how this works in practice and what it really means. I think that everybody has heard about the Affordable Care Act and knows about the challenges that we're dealing with the Affordable Care Act, as well as the potential positive. And I think that the opportunity is that this really is a major health policy and public health achievement. But the challenge is that from the beginning it was politicized. And so the opposition, the concept of death panels, the concept of don't let the government get its hands on my Medicare, the blatant contradictions that existed in this built opposition and misunderstanding from the beginning. And within that, because people don't necessarily understand what public health is, the role that this plays in the Affordable Care Act and in a reformed health system was not clear. You hear a lot of language from the leaders who were supportive about moving the issue forward and moving from a system that focuses on treatment to a system that focuses on health, or focusing on creating a healthier population versus focusing on just dealing with the problems once they're formed, has really has been a positive step forward, excuse me, but has unfortunately not been fleshed out enough. So when legislators or leaders or the president even has talked about this, he's often talking about things like worksite wellness or clinical preventive services, both critically important, but not necessarily the work that happens in prevention and wellness that we all know happens on the front lines. So not necessarily the menu labeling, which was part of the Affordable Care Act, or the workforce issues and moving forward, or the public health research, which will help us better inform the policies moving forward, or the focus on reducing health inequities. These kinds of issues have gotten lost, but they're part of the Affordable Care Act and are really part of the pieces where we have been trying to focus. The most commonly understood piece of the Affordable Care Act, the prevention fund, has been labeled a slush fund. And even to this day has been is under attack and is not understood by the public and is misused by members of Congress and, again, the president, because the goal of the prevention fund was not to supplant existing dollars. It was to supplement so that we can actually move forward on all of these initiatives that we do know work. And from the beginning, the money was used to supplant existing funds, which means that if they are successful in getting rid of the prevention fund, the CDC, HRSA, NIH, SAMHSA, a whole series of public health agencies, of public health service agencies, will not, their core budgets will be undercut because that's where a lot of the money has gone for core services that were ongoing prior to this. So these are challenges that we need to focus on, but the clutter that surrounds these issues is phenomenal. And I just pulled out a couple of headlines that I saw in the last couple of weeks related to this, and both the positive on the left and the negative on the right, I think are really telling about how this debate has gone forward and where the problems lie for us. I mean, Obama has done a good job of taking over this phrase of Obamacare and making it about Obama, yes, Obama cares, and so he's fine with that phrase. But a lot of people would see that and say that they don't, and not understand that that's a contradiction for them. Obamacare is a bad thing, but it's tackling childhood obesity. So what does that mean, and is it actually moving forward in a good way? The number of people who have labeled the prevention fund a slush fund is unfortunately growing, and so we really do need to continue to do education about that. Which leads me to the idea of the budget appropriations process. It's really the core function of the federal government as it relates to public health often. And it's setting the overarching policies. It's things like, you know, focusing FDA and giving FDA the authority to oversee tobacco, or creating community health centers, or protecting reproductive health. But a lot of this will not get done unless the funds are available to do this. And one of the opportunities that exists, but again, because people don't know how public health, how the policies that exist in at the local level are in fact public health policies, leads to this misunderstanding that in fact every community benefits from public health. And if you've seen any of the announcements for National Public Health Week this year, that's one of the things that we're really going to try and tackle, is inform the public about the public, about the importance of public health in the community. You wake up in the morning, you are sleeping in sheets and in pajamas that are in fact not flammable. You are going to go brush your teeth with clean water. You are going to go to a local restaurant to meet a colleague for breakfast, and you're not going to walk out of there having eaten a breakfast that is an E. coli disaster. You go through your day and you don't even recognize how public health impacts your life. So that's really one of the things that we're going to try and do. But these are some of the challenges that we face: the budget deficit concerns, the need to get that under control, the misunderstanding about what is public health and the competing priorities. The infographic on the lower right-hand corner is an infographic that APHA just put together to try and help in a very short, pithy way that we hope maybe USA Today or somebody else picks up, will give people a pictorial graphic about what public health is and how it impacts your life. And you can find that on the website. We have a whole array of tools that we use to try and get all this information out. And one of the pieces that's going on right now is the policy process, that APHA's policy process is considered a convoluted process, but is not in any way linear. So it does take into consideration a number of different implications. But I wanted to just give you, remind you how easy it is to impact the process. Every one of you who's an APHA member should get this. And even actually, we had a meeting not long ago with the Ukrainian health minister and many of her staff, and her primary public health leader or staff person is an APHA member, and he gets these. And so literally around the world, people are getting our advocacy alerts, and if only everybody around the world could respond to them, maybe we'd get more traction. But this is the most recent one of public health funding, and you've heard about the sequester that's coming up that is going to dramatically cut the budget. Every part of the government is going to get cut. The only piece of the government that has been focused that they're not going to potentially cut and that has received any real notice is the defense budget. That's not going to help us. If they don't cut the defense budget, it means that non-discretionary funding that works, that we have been focusing on, is only going to be hurt worse. So it's very easy to do this. And if you see, as a constituent in the American Public Health Association, advocate is right up there. Because it's only if people understand where we're coming from that they'll be able to recognize that we can have impact broadly. So this is how our policy process works at APHA. And this is over the course of a year. So it's not as bad as it looks, but it really does allow for something to come out the other side, which is evidence-based, which allows us to go up to talk to our partners, to talk to the government, to talk to the media, to really help people understand that we are moving forward on an agenda that is evidence-based, that has a rationale, that we can go back to some sort of site and say, this is how it works and this is how it should work. So it is a constantly moving target. I left the Governing Council, which was changing this as we speak. So again, if you come back next year, it'll look different. But it is really trying to make sure that what comes out is the most positive, beneficial, true public health policy with the most up-to-date science that exists. And so the question always remains is what's next? And as you saw, we have overarching priorities, some of which overlap very clearly with the Canadian Public Health Association. And I think that one of the things that could come next that could be incredibly beneficial is the idea that we can work across borders to try and make differences, to really focus on the things that are important to not just the American people or the Canadian people, but to the public's health to make a difference would help us move it forward in ways that we haven't really been able to before. So hopefully we'll be able to talk a little bit about that. And thank you for your time.